is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, December 11th, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney, working from my hotel room down in Dallas. Taylor Schwenk is back in the Schwenk Studios back in Connecticut. And Taylor, another example, and I think this is going to make you laugh, that I got another text that was meant for Buster Posey, and this one had a transaction overture.
Oh, wow. Did you keep up the charade?
I'm not going to get into what it was, but it was funny, and I texted the person back, and I'm like, you got the wrong Buster. You got the wrong Buster. And he was like, please don't say anything. And I'm like, don't worry, I get it. It's like eavesdropping. I know it wasn't meant for me. How would you handle that situation?
Well, I would string the person along and make them think I was the other Buster. And
oh, my gosh.
And maybe, you know, turn some things upside down in the Giants camp, just for fun.
You got a short-term mind. I'm playing the long game. So the winter meetings got busy in the last 24 to 48 hours. We had the big signing of Juan Soto, our big agreement we heard about on Sunday. And then on Tuesday, a rash of move. Max Fried, 8 years, $218 million to sign with the Yankees. They're also talking with Christian Walker, going to be talking with Paul Hambakides, Hembo, and Jorge Castillo about that. Nathan Eovaldi returns to the Rangers, 3 years and $75 million, despite the fact that the Red Sox Orioles had interest in him. Andrés Giménez was moved to the Toronto Blue Jays, with the Guardians getting Spencer Horowitz, and then flipping him to the Pirates for prospects. The Tigers signed Alex Cobb. The Rangers traded for slugger Jake Berger. The total teardown of the Marlins nears its completion, Jesús Luzardo is among the last remaining players from the team that made the playoffs 2 years ago. He reportedly is out in the trade market. Nolan Arenado's list of teams to which he would be amenable for a deal is at six: Dodgers, Angels, Padres, Phillies, Mets, Red Sox. The draft lottery was decided. The Washington Nationals got the first pick in the draft. The Angels at number two. The Mariners, even though the Mariners weren't close to being the worst team in baseball last year, they're at number three in the draft lottery. And the White Sox, coming off the worst season in history, they were ineligible for the number one pick. They are picking 10th overall. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, we're going to do one more show this week. So we're recording this on Wednesday. We will record our next show Thursday evening, up on Friday, 5 a.m., our usual sort of overnight publishing schedule. So we'll have.
I think we got to build it around Soto's press conference, right? Which is now Juan Soto's schedule to be unveiled as a Met on Thursday.
Yeah.
Maybe wait for the conclusion of that.
I think so. And then we'll have our pal Jesse Rogers, everyone down there hanging out in their hotel room separately. We have to get his take on his hotel room and what he's heard at the winter meetings.
There you go.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, of course, is Paul Hambakides, highest paid researcher in the history of the world. That's still true even after Juan Soto signed his $765 million deal with none deferred, Hembo, right?
Craziness.
The conversation absolutely here after that deal was announced was like, man, Ohtani got screwed.
Yeah, Ohtani somehow became the most underpaid asset in baseball after signing a 10-year, $700 million contract that was deferred. So, look, more power to Juan Soto. More power to Scott Boras, who obviously played this thing to a fiddle. And there are all sorts of Yankees fans here that I work with that are enraged still to the fact that Juan Soto used us for a year, our small ballpark, hitting in front of Aaron Judge, only to get Uncle Steve's generational money. It's quite a time to be a fan of these New York sports teams. And obviously Mets and Yankees fans that we work with feel very differently about how it all went down.
All right, I want to ask you about Nolan Arenado and about Garrett Crochet and some other topics. But since we mentioned what went on with Soto, tell me about some of the Soto narratives that you're pushing back against, including some of those that were sort of established here on Monday on this podcast.
Yeah, the first of which is Juan Soto is now being overpaid. Buster, I just don't see it that way. I don't see it that way because it has long been my belief that players of Juan Soto's stature, players at the very top of baseball's hierarchy, have been underpaid. Last year, Fangraphs estimates he was worth about $65 million. They estimate that he was worth about $49 per season over the last four. And I think the reason why we know he's not being overpaid is because this is not Uncle Steve going rogue. The Yankees offered $760 million themselves. And so this is not, you know, one sort of rogue actor, for lack of a better term. This is not back when Alex Rodriguez signed for $252 back in the day, which was more than double anybody else. This is what the market had decided Juan Soto cost. So I don't view this as Juan Soto being overpaid. And Buster, the second narrative that I want to push back on is the fact that it's okay, the Yankees, you know, get out scot-free here, because, you know, you can't possibly have someone who's that much of a liability playing defense in right field. I mean, who are we kidding? Who are we kidding? The notion that the Yankees have dodged a bullet here because they're going to have better right field defense now is absurd. First of all, Buster, this is the same Yankees fan base that worships Derek Jeter despite the fact that he cost them something like 250 runs playing defense at shortstop, which is one thing. It's ironic, and we can table that for another discussion. Of course, I had to take a shot at Derek Jeter in a question that has nothing to do with Derek Jeter. But secondly, we know that one's ability to control the strike zone and what one does in the batter's box matters disproportionately right now, especially in baseball, in terms of the value that you produce. So look, if you're a Yankees fan and you want to make yourself feel better that you're going to upgrade your right field defense, okay, that's fine. But you offered him $760 million to do it, and he turned you down to play for somebody else.
So it's interesting because when I talked about this on Monday, I mentioned the fact that David Ortiz, you know, who is the best DH in baseball history, who, you know, was voted in the Hall of Fame. He topped out his salary at $16 million during the course of his career. What you're also telling me is you feel like David Ortiz was underappreciated to some degree in terms of what his offensive impact was.
Absolutely. Very, very much so. Buster, the notion of the five-tool player, the idea of having diversity when it comes to skill in your lineup, and all these things that we have adhered to historically may have been true once, but they're not virtues anymore, at least not how I see it. We live in a world right now, Buster, in which the pitching environment is so friendly and the hitting environment is so challenging that someone of Juan Soto's caliber in the batter's box is disproportionately important as a result. And if you look at the way that teams are building across baseball, I scratch my head at those that decide that defense is of super importance, that run prevention is something that we should go chase. No, I think the Mets have this thing exactly right. The most valuable thing that you can be in the game of baseball right now is a, you know, for lack of a better term, aircraft carrier, top of the hierarchy type hitter. That's exactly what Juan Soto is. And I don't care if he doesn't own a glove. I don't care if he doesn't pick one up for the next 15 years. He in the batter's box is the reason why they paid him all this money. And like I told you before, I think he's going to earn every penny of it.
So one of the neat stories that I've heard in reporting out this piece that Jeff Passan and I are doing about the Soto negotiations is to hear all the stories about how billionaires are asking Soto questions about that plate appearance in Cleveland before he hit that extra inning three-run homer. You know, like it was a Kirk Gibson moment, like it was one of the greatest things anyone's seen. People in baseball love to talk about that plate appearance because it was such an outlier within the sport these days to have a hitter that much in the command the way that Soto was. All right, the Yankees begin the process of pivoting after they lose out on Soto. They signed Max Fried, $218 million over 7 years. That the Yankees had internal questions about whether or not Max Fried wanted to pitch in the Northeast. I know other teams in the Northeast also wondered about that as well. And there was another pitcher from California that they also had that question about, and that was CC Sabathia. Okay, back in 2009, that worked out okay. What'd you think of this signing?
I like it, but I don't love it. Here's why I like it, Buster. I think OPS allowance, and the numbers bear this out, is the single best predictor of run prevention.
Yeah.
And by that standard of measure, Max Fried has been consistently outstanding. It's 609 last year, 617 over the last two, 602 over the last three, 611 over the last four. That is top of the food chain type stuff. And those are numbers driven by excellent home run avoidance. He's allowed 47 homers in 603 innings across that time. And at Yankee Stadium, that is a foremost virtue. But there are also reasons not to love it, Buster. He was a Brave for 10 years. The largest extension that I ever saw they gave him in terms of the offer was 5 for $135. Take that for whatever you feel it might be valuable. The second reason why I don't love it is that it's not overpowering stuff. The results come despite an ordinary strikeout rate and a pretty ordinary stuff profile. And the third reason I don't love it, Buster, is that I don't think you can find for me a pitcher with a BMI like that. I mean, he's 6'4", 190. That's what he's listed at. That had excellent life through his 30s. The body is very Jacob deGrom-y to me, for lack of a better term. And so I think over the first half of this contract, he is very likely to earn every penny. $27 million a year for the pitcher he is right now, to me, is actually a good value. But that's a grit your teeth through the second half of the contract type deal. But that, of course, is the nature of the beast in free agency.
Yeah, I want Taylor to chime in here. Taylor, the Yankees rotation, as we speak, looks like it could be Gerrit Cole, Max Fried, Clark Schmidt, Carlos Rodon, Luis Gil, and they also have Marcus Stroman, Nestor Cortez waiting in the wings. From the perspective of an Orioles fan, how do you like that rotation?
Buster, you're bringing this to me. You obviously haven't heard the news today. Trevor Rogers will be competing for a spot in the starting rotation, so Major League Baseball, you're on notice, man. Trevor Rogers, he just ran out of gas last year, Buster. He's going to be fine.
Oh, man, I thought... Well, you got to admit that was brilliant, bringing Taylor in for that moment.
That was the good stuff. As Corbin Burns is probably days away from signing a $300 million contract, you guys had 1 year of Corbin Burns, and you're now going to be doing the whole, like, let's patch this run prevention thing together thing. Look, Taylor, I feel your pain. I rooted for the Orioles growing up, and they didn't have much of a chance in this year's free agency cycle, to put it kindly.
The kids call it cope.
All right, Andre Jimenez is traded to the Toronto Blue Jays, and what I think was, I don't want to call it a salary dump, but it was salary reallocation if you're the Cleveland Guardians, who are constantly managing their payroll. And I thought this was a good pickup for the Blue Jays. You just need good players. What'd you think?
I see it differently. I think this is a masterclass in asset management by Chris Antonetti, preying upon a front office in Toronto that has an antiquated view of team building. That's not to say that I don't view Jimenez as having value. He clearly does. Over the last 3 years, it's 80 steals and 60 defensive runs saved. And the Blue Jays very clearly see him as their next shortstop once Bo Bichette inevitably walks. But we're talking about $97 million across the next five seasons for a player with an 89 OPS plus across the last two seasons. And they traded away Spencer Horowitz, who's got a 355 on base percentage in the majors and a 413 on base percentage in the minors, to which I say the Toronto Blue Jays need to stop chasing run prevention. This is not a strategy that works in 2024. Last year, Dalton Varsho was a 5-war player for them with a below average batting line. I would much prefer the season that Gabriel Moreno had. They, of course, traded one for the other. I just don't think this works. I don't think chasing run prevention in today's day and age, particularly with defense, is the right way to go. I think the 2025 Jays are going to look a lot like the 2024 Jays, a team that averages something like 4 runs a game, that needs Vlad Jr. to go absolutely nuclear to have any chance of being a league average run prevention team.
All right, the Chicago Cubs right now are in the process of evaluating offers for Cody Bellinger and Seiya Suzuki. What do you make of that?
It's bizarre. Very bizarre to me that they are willing to shop around Seiya Suzuki, whom I believe to be a very valuable asset. And perhaps they see it that way, and they're just kind of seeing, you know, the way that the rest of the league might view him. But Seiya Suzuki is only owed $38 million across the next two. He's produced about $55 million in value according to the previous two. I'm using FanGraph's version of batting runs, which estimates your cumulative value at the plate. By that measure, Suzuki was the 10th best hitter in the National League last season. The Cubs, a team very similar to the Blue Jays in terms of what they prioritize, in terms of what they chase, I think that they would be much better off in trading Cody Bellinger, who is viewed, I think, somewhat positively around the league for being a defense-first asset, a value-positive base runner, at least a league-average hitter. Maybe you have to take on some of that salary if you're the Chicago Cubs. But to me, Seiya Suzuki is a rock in the middle of that lineup, and I am certainly not trading him away unless I can get a king's ransom. I view him a lot more positively than it seems the Cubs do, or perhaps any team around baseball. That's a really good hitter, and I'm not trading him unless I'm getting 150 cents on the dollar.
So it's really interesting because I've been talking with folks with other teams. They really believe that a lot of what the Cubs are doing are driven by the Cubs' perception of whatever they see their Wrigley Field is for hitters. In other words, last year at the trade deadline, Isak Paredes was picked up by the Cubs. The feeling was, hey, you know, he's a pull hitter. Maybe he can be the guy who could hit the ball through the wind here in Wrigley Field. And he was terrible. It just didn't work out, right? And maybe, and I'm just spitballing here, but I wonder if there's something going on there with Suzuki and the idea that, you know, an offensive player, you almost have to go back to those. Remember when the Giants had the, you know, play the style of baseball under Bruce Bochy that they referred to as torture. Like it feels like the Cubs are, you know, trying to build a team together that, you know, as you say, is might be focused on run prevention.
That's a zag and not a zig right now. That's a zag and not a zig. We have 100 years of data on Wrigley Field to tell you exactly how you should build your baseball team. We also have all the modern math that tells us that it's much harder to hit right now than to pitch. I think the Cubs would be better served investing in their lineup than they would be in either their pitching staff or majoring in run prevention, because right now that's much harder to come by in the game of baseball.
We heard from Joel Wolf, who represents Nolan Arenado, yesterday about Nolan Arenado being willing to be dealt to more than just a couple of teams. In fact, the list that emerged yesterday, I think it was from John Denton, who's a reporter in St. Louis, that there are six teams. You can rule out a couple right away. I would assume that the Dodgers are not going to deal for him. They had an opportunity. They've had opportunities. I think all things being equal, that might be where Nolan would want to play. The Angels already have Anthony Rendon. I don't see them picking up Arenado. So there are not a lot of teams potentially that he could land with. You know, the Mets are among the teams. The Boston Red Sox are among the teams. What do you got on Nolan Arenado?
So the Phillies and the Mets, Buster, are the two teams that I wrote down as potential or even likely destinations for Nolan Arenado. And I'm attacking this, of course, as a fan of the Phillies, as you well know. I'm not thrilled about the notion of trading for him. It's a $64 million bill that I have to foot for a 34-year-old league average hitter with a crumbling batted ball profile, albeit one that still plays plus defense at third base. But here's why I think that Nolan Arenado might be worth a flyer still at this stage in his career. And that's because I think historically great players, especially ones as young as he is, he's not ancient. He's still closer to 30 than he is to 40. Historically great players are players worth betting on at this juncture in their careers, especially, Buster, when they've been left for dead. And I do view Nolan Arenado as that, as a historically great player who has a real chance at the Hall of Fame someday. And I don't think that he's totally done. He's a 2-3 war player who can still glove it at third base, where I think he should stay, and potentially in a more favorable hitting environment, the numbers offensively might tick up as well. But here's the catch. The reason why I think the Phillies and the Mets are both good options for Arenado is because they have the ability to foot that entire $64 million bill, but only, of course, if the Cardinals are willing to help me out. I'll take every single one of those $64 million, but I'm getting Ryan Helsley too. I'm getting the last year of Ryan Helsley before he hits free agency, and that's going to give me a dominant back end of the bullpen if I'm either team. So I will pay every single cent remaining for Nolan Arenado. I'll stick him at third base and I'll figure out the rest, but I want Ryan Helsley in the deal. What do you say, Buster?
You know, it's interesting because Nolan, I mean, he's such a passionate player to the degree that I think if you had a stat just based on body language, he would lead the major leagues. Like, you know exactly how Nolan's feeling from moment to moment. He desperately wants to win. And your instinct is a player like that would not necessarily be the best possible fit for the Mets or the Phillies, right? But I will tell you this. And I'll take it back in the day. Paul O'Neill was a player who the Yankees acquired, and he was famous when he was with the Cincinnati Reds for, you know, breaking water coolers and going nuts. And so when he was acquired by the Yankees, you know, the sort of the perception around baseball was, oh, he's not going to be a good fit in New York. And Gene Michael, who acquired him, said, no, I didn't buy any of that, because my feeling was he puts more pressure on himself than any fan is going to. Like, whatever booing he would hear from the fans, he's already done that internally 1,000 times. That's how I think Nolan kind of is. Like, I think Nolan is a really harsh self-critic. So maybe it would lift him to go to this great team of veterans with the Phillies, you know, or maybe lift him to go and play with Juan Soto and play with Francisco Lindor with the Mets. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it makes sense. I think he'd be a great fit in either environment. And I think practically it makes sense too. You put Nolan Arenado at third base, you move Mark Vientos to first base, you let Pete Alonso walk. In Philly, you put him at third base, you trade Alec Bohm, which the Phillies are want to do. And that makes all the sense in the world too. Those are the two teams for whom I would say it makes the most sense for Nolan Arenado.
All right. Hembo, I appreciate your time on this. Always fun. Man, it's been fun the last 24 hours to see all these baseball deals going down.
Yes, this is the best kind of baseball season right now. The hot stove, Buster. It's good talking to you as always.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Jorge Castillo covers baseball for ESPN. He lives in New York, focuses on New York teams. You're going to be at the Juan Soto press conference on Thursday?
Yes, unofficially, Thursday afternoon at Citi Field. It's not official, the deal yet, but it's heading in that direction.
Yeah. Well, we'll probably get the announcement later tonight or tomorrow morning, right, when they get the official passing of the physical, contract is signed, and then somebody's going to cut him a check for a lot of money, I think, Jorge. So we'll talk about the Mets in a moment, but the Yankees, their first big pivot move was to sign Max Fried. What did you think of that, and what's next in your eyes?
First of all, 8 years is a lot, but I think that's just in the starting pitching market. That's what this market is right now. It's just really hot. The Yankees prioritized, if they weren't going to get Juan Soto, they wanted a frontline starting pitcher. I know Max Fried, the Red Sox were involved, and the Yankees came out with the eighth year, I think, and they took him, and now they have a guy who they slide right in behind Gerrit Cole. And you look at 1 through 5, not including Nestor Cortez and Marcus Stroman, you know, you got Gerrit Cole, Max Fried, Clark Schmidt, Luis Hill, and who else? That's 4. I'm missing one. But they have a really good starting rotation, one of the best in baseball. And you can trade from that starting rotation right now.
Maybe Carlos Rodon. I was going to say Carlos Rodon, and then, you know, you've got Nestor Cortez, you got Marcus Stroman. You would assume that there's some kind of move coming with at least one of those guys, yes?
Yeah, I think that the Yankees have some pitching depth, and they need a first baseman. They could use an outfielder. Maybe a third baseman. There are a lot of ways they could take this pivot further, and trading from that starting pitching depth is a way they could do that. You know, Cody Bellinger's out there, Kyle Tucker is out there. Are the Astros? Is Jim Crane going to trade Kyle Tucker to the Yankees? I don't know. Maybe, but you know, there's a history there. But yeah, there are a lot of ways the Yankees can address their needs, and training from the starting pitching depth is one of them. And Brian Cashman spoke to us a little earlier, and he acknowledged that's a possibility. He also talked about the catching depth is another possibility. But Luis Hill had a big year. You know, you got Rodon, you got Stroman, you got Cortez. Yeah, there's a lot there.
First base, you mentioned Christian Walker. That's a move that would seem to make a lot of sense because of experience and defense, and it's a shorter-term deal for a free agent. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the guy I keep hearing. I heard it just a little earlier. That seems to be the guy that the Yankees could plug there. Veteran guy. They need help. I think they need to upgrade their defense. He's Gold Glover at first base. And yeah, the shorter deal is important as well. Probably get a 3-year deal, maybe 4, probably 3. He fits still their plans, and he'd be an upgrade. And I think Christian Walker, if you get Christian Walker, like, I think Cody Bellinger just fits for the Yankees. I just, you know, at first, he plays the three positions they could sort of use. It's first base, center field, left field. He's a left-handed hitter. One of the reasons why the Yankees wanted Juan Soto so bad last year, beyond the fact that he's an amazing baseball player, is that he's a left-handed hitter that you can pair with Aaron Judge. And they still need a left-handed hitter. So I think Bellinger fits really well, but Christian Walker does as well.
It's interesting because they're going to move Aaron Judge to, you know, back to a corner. But what I think has been missed to some degree is the fact that they seem committed to the idea of Jason Dominguez playing center field for them in 2025. And I think what a lot of fans saw at the end of last year was that he struggled at the corners. But I think the Yankees feel like he's just going to be more comfortable in a place he's played before. What do you got there?
Yeah, I agree. Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone are indicating that he's their center fielder. Now, things could change here, you know, trade talks and all that. But yeah, I think when Dominguez came up, there was a lot of talk. Hey, why didn't they call him up on September 1st? He shows up like, you know, a week, 10 days later, and he struggles in the outfield, and he didn't play in October. He was thrown in, you know, in the spotlight there, and it didn't go too well. I think if you put him in a position he's comfortable with from the beginning of the season, he has the tools, he obviously has the talent. So I think it would be a better situation for him. And just getting Judge out of center field, you know, he's about to hit his mid-30s. He's 6'7". We've never seen this before. You want him to get into right field where it's going to be a little easier on him, on his legs.
The Mets, the question now as we move forward is what else are they going to do this winter? What's your sense of that?
I think, you know, David Stearns yesterday said that, you know, they have room for another starting pitcher, but it's not a need. I do think they get another starting pitcher. It's not going to be Corbin Burns, which I think someone we all sort of thought could fit, given Stearns has a history of Burns and all that. But I think they go for a tier below, you know, whether it's they bring back Sean Manaea, whether it's Walker Buehler. Everybody wants Roky Sasaki. You know, everyone's – that's the clearance style. It's like when you go to TJ Maxx and you find something that shouldn't be there. It's like, whoa, this is a lot cheaper than it should be. You know, Roky Sasaki is an ace, and everybody wants him. So that's another possibility.
Nick Pagetta would be another guy with a good arm, you know, the sort of guy that you could imagine the Mets feel like they could do something with.
Yeah. And then I think obviously Pete Alonso's out there. They could use another. I think they need to, you know, bolster the offense a little further. Obviously having Juan Soto does a lot, but I think they could add perhaps a first baseman. And Pete Alonso is homegrown, fan favorite. He makes some sense. But the Mets aren't done. I think the bullpen is another area of need for them, and they're going to address that.
So you mentioned the name of Corbin Burnes. We all connected the Mets with them to some degree, A, because the need that the Mets have for a starting pitcher, but also because Burnes pitched for David Stearns when they were both in Milwaukee. You mentioned the idea that, you know, Corbin Burnes might just simply be too expensive. It's fairly clear with what David Stearns is doing that draft picks, compensation draft picks, seem to be something that he's really paying attention to with some of the choices that he makes. Burnes' price has gone super high. You know, the Red Sox were thought to be in it. The reports out of Boston today that it's gone too far for the Red Sox. He would seem to be a great fit for the San Francisco Giants. What do you think?
I think those are the two teams. Toronto, obviously, Toronto's finishing second and third for pretty much everybody nowadays. It's like them and the Red Sox have that sort of competition going. But, yeah, San Francisco's the other team and Boston. And last night, you know, when this free signing happened, it's like, oh, what does Burnes get? Oh, it's Strasburg money now. You know, it's 7 years, 245 is what Strasburg got 5 years ago. He's going to be in that ballpark, you would assume, if the bidding were strong enough for him. And I think with the Yankees and the Red Sox, what happened there with Fried is let's snatch Fried up because, you know, you don't know with, you know, this Burnes situation where this could go. So I think, you know, Burnes is obviously an ace type starter. The Red Sox need to do something. They're not doing anything besides Chapman. The Giants make a lot of sense in a lot of ways. They already got Willie Adames. They Buster Posey's he's been pretty aggressive, and I think Burnes makes sense for them. So it's a game of musical chairs. The Yankees got their guy. Now everyone's looking to see, you know, at least a couple of teams if they can land Corbin Burnes.
Yeah, I think it was Jeff on the on Baseball Tonight last night. He mentioned that you're not bringing in Buster Posey to be head of baseball operations and his first winter. Giants aren't going to spend money. They went out and got Adames. And it would make sense for them to add a big rotation piece and get back to the sort of, you know, pitching and defense type team that won championships for the Giants back in the early 2000s. You mentioned the Red Sox need to do something. You know, I'm absolutely convinced of this, that there is a desire with ownership more than there has been in 5 years to actually have the Red Sox go out and do something. But I mentioned yesterday, I think this is like an extension of the Mookie Betts tax they keep on paying. Right? Because the perception of the Red Sox has changed so dramatically over the last 5 years after they traded away Mookie Betts. And I don't think they're a destination team right now for players, which means that they essentially have to overpay for guys. And so there is, you know, some interesting frustration maybe within the Red Sox organization about not being able to land guys. There was a fascinating story yesterday. I think Sean McAdams, Mass Live, wrote a piece about how there's a difference of opinion within the Red Sox organization. Craig Breslow is not in favor of going after Alex Bregman, or at least not getting him at a certain price. Alex Cora, Sam Kennedy are. I think these are desperate times calling for desperate measures, especially Jorge, because you look at the Red Sox, and I mentioned earlier this week, there's a lot that's actually really good in place for them. What do you think?
They have that farm system. They got guys that are going to be in AAA in Worcester, my hometown. I'm telling my friends to go watch them because they're going to have some good talent there. And, you know, since they have that great talent there, and Tristan Casas, another young, you know, guy who could be an all-star type slugger. Gary Cochet should be a guy absolutely on their radar if they miss out on Corbin Burnes, especially. But I have heard the Red Sox have been way more aggressive than they have the last couple of years. That's what I've been hearing all week here in Dallas. They are for real. They got super aggressive on Juan Soto. I heard a little too late, but they were aggressive on Soto. John Henry was involved. And you know, it's a little different than it's been the last couple of years for whatever reason. But it's like the Red Sox a few years ago, you know, now it's not a few years ago anymore. It's 6 years ago. They win the World Series. You got Mookie Betts. You got Devers. Things seem to be going in the right direction. They trade Mookie Betts, and it just not had been the same. I know they had that run that 1 year with Kike Hernandez turning into Babe Ruth in October. But besides that, it's been tough, and they're trying. It just... it's what we keep saying, it's a game of musical chairs. There are a few big market teams trying this year. And that's why I think we're seeing the prices that we're seeing. The bidders have money and the Red Sox need to get uncomfortable, you know, and land one of these guys, whether it's, you know, you're giving money to Burns or Bregman, somebody, whatever, you know, you're hearing different guys, or you go out and get Garrett Crochet because you have the prospect capital to get a guy like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I, you know, in this story that that I've been working on with Jeff, when Scott Boras was part of that meeting with Juan Soto with the Red Sox, he essentially said to Werner and to Tom Werner and to John Henry, like, where you been? Like, why did you change up? You won those championships. You've had this great franchise. You've gone away. Now they're trying to get back into the game. And as you say, musical chairs, it may not be that they're going to wind up with anything big. I was texting with someone in the organization yesterday, and he said, man, if all the Red Sox wind up with is, you know, one of the second tier starting pitchers, it's going to be a revolt again among Red Sox fans. We'll see where that goes. Jorge, thanks for doing this and have fun at the press conference.
Thank you, Buster. Thanks for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. Let's go to the voicemail box.
Hey, I'm from Northern California. I'm a longtime M's fan, and seeing this Soto deal, it really seems telling to me about what, you know, a lot of what you're talking about, which is the entertainment value of the game and how it's changing, and that the walk, which is Soto's by far his, you know, most elite attribute, it seems to be now the most valuable commodity in the game, when it is, I think by almost everybody's assessment, the most boring. This comes from somebody who grew up loving watching Edgar Martinez and all that he contributed to those Mariners teams. And he'll be a valuable player, Soto, and probably make the Hall of Fame. But it really is telling that starting pitchers and guys who, you know, athleticism bring, it seems like what would bring people to the ballpark and eyes to the TV, are being less and less valued, and the walk is being more and more valued. And kind of seems telling about where the game has gone.
Yeah, so I don't think it's the walk that's being valued. I think it's on base percentage. And Soto's an alt, you know, he's a great hitter. What he doesn't do is swing at pitches out of the zone. And he forces pitchers to work in the zone. And when he works in the zone, he hammers it. And that separates him. I do agree with you on the starting pitching. I don't understand why baseball, and quite frankly, even more so the player association, just stand by and let this erosion of the, you know, perception and the value of starting pitchers just go downhill. I don't get it. Now, it's weird to say that on a day in which Max Fried got $218 million, but I think that group of starting pitchers getting paid just gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and they need a rule change to do that. And I think if you compel managers to keep starting pitchers in the game longer, then you know what? Offensive numbers are going to go up, and the sport and the action, they're going to go up, and that's what they've been doing some of these rule changes for.
Chuck North Source Rex writes in, Mariners, the Mariners need a third baseman and Bregman is available. If the Mariners were willing to spend, how much would front office factor in the fans' hate of Bregman for his role in the Astros scandal? For the record, I would forgive him if he came to Seattle. He also wants to know if there's any examples of something like this happening in the past.
Yeah, there's some for sure. Like, and I think if you had talked about Carlos Correa possibly going to the Yankees right after the sign stealing scandal broke, forget it. Like, I don't think there's any chance that they would have looked at him at that time. I do think that there are those little pieces of hangover that exist, you know, but I don't think that it would be something that would prevent the Mariners from signing Alex Bregman. I think what would prevent the Mariners from signing Bregman is they don't have payroll flexibility. That's been clear the last 2 years, and Bregman is going to command, you know, something in the range of $26, $30 million a year.
Poor Mariners, poor Chuck Source, Norris Rex, poor David Schoenfield. Let's do some shout outs. Andy Stewart Alcorn, who is stumping for Carlos Delgado for the Hall of Fame in the inbox. Reggie from Austin, Mitchell Black, who enjoyed The Simpsons, Funday Night Football, wonders if Major League Baseball should do something like that. The Nickelodeon slime simulcast. I'm sure you've watched 0 minutes of that. Mark in Germany, Dr. David Campbell. And then this is the best one of the day. Blake Doan, a math teacher who showed his work like a math teacher in an email. He wanted to present or figure out the difference in present day value between Juan Soto's contract and Shohei Ohtani's. He did the math again. He showed his work. Buster, if you dispute it, I can show you the numbers. He says there is a $771.616 million difference between the two contracts. He adjusted for inflation. Wow. So there you go. Thank you. Thank you, Blake, for doing
that. Soto gets to make money with his own money.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. So good cap to the show there, Blake. Appreciate everyone calling and writing in. And we'll be back on Friday morning.
Yeah. And by the way, this is all these discussions when we talk about Ohtani's contract and him getting, you know, I mean, a year later feels like he got a bad contract.
He's got to hold
this
out.
This is all theoretical, right? I think Shohei Ohtani is going to be okay. Like I think he's going to be well compensated for his efforts in baseball. What do you think, Taylor?
I don't know, man. He should hold out for a new contract. That's what I would do. Short-term guy over
Time
here.
To opt out, right?
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah, you do wonder. I mean, I'm just spitballing here. If at some point, I mean, Ohtani is so popular. If he went to the Dodgers and said, "Hey, you know what? Let's redo that contract." I wonder what the response in the Dodgers would be. I don't think it would be just a blanket. Yeah, we're not doing that. I think the Dodgers understand how popular that guy is. That would be his leverage to get them to open it up and actually pay him.
Yeah, I mean, they could make some of that money up. I mean, it's all deferred anyway, so, you know, it's a problem for tomorrow's Dodgers management.
Right, yeah, exactly. All right, well, that's it for today. My thanks to Jorge Castillo, to Paul Imbachides, and, of course, to Taylor Schwenk working from the Schwenk Studios, despite the fact that Lola's been sick lately. How's she doing?
Lola's down for the count right now. My wife just regained her health. So, we are walking wounded around here. Cross your fingers for me that I don't succumb to this illness.
Welcome to parenthood.
I know. I said to my wife,
as Lola starts going to schools and stuff like that, you know what? You're disease central. You'll be right in the middle of everything.
I literally said this morning, this is the next 6 years of our life. So we better get used to it.
That's exactly right. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.